It's time!
Happy New Year! The Eagle rises again! 29-0.
That's it! He's got the chance!
Nate Diaz!
He's done it!
It is all over! Nate Diaz beats Conor McGregor!
What a night, ladies and gentlemen! What a night!
Rose Lava, you're trying to close the show!
She was doing a great job of faith!
You're listening to Pound for Pound, ringside for all things MMA and boxing on WFUV Sports.
Ladies and gentlemen, Pound for Pound is back. I am Travis Hayden, joined by Ryan Deptula and Ethan Best. Emma Leonardi on the board for us today. And guys, let's get right into it. UFC 327 happened over the weekend, and that was an all-timer of a card. How are we feeling about it?
No mercy.
No mercy. No mercy is the one thing that I think we need to be shown, and we'll get into that is the overall topic, and we will get into that for a second.
I can't lie, Travis. You're very energetic today.
I know. I'm a little too energetic today. We have a lot on the itinerary today that I'm so excited to talk about. First off, on the itinerary that happened in combat sports this weekend is Tyson Fury came out of his sixth retirement fight and has finally won a fight again for the first time in a couple years after he had his trilogy with two fights with the greatest heavyweight of all his generation, Usyk.
Yeah, I agree with that.
There's no opposition.
No, it was Fury, but now we know it's Usyk. Yeah. We had Tyson Fury get a unanimous decision victory like he normally tends to do in the later years of his sport, and he is right there, and he calls out Anthony Joshua.
He sure does. And you know, to be honest, this is a match that I have wanted to see for the better part of, let's say, 5 years, and I definitely think that this thing is going to happen in the fall.
I think I've been going on longer than 5 years, to be honest.
It might be like a decade.
We're reaching a decade at this point, and I think I don't believe anything Tyson Fury, Netflix, Anthony Joshua say. We're not getting this until at least mid-2027. They could get out of here with autumn. We're gonna get this at some point at Wembley Stadium. It needs to happen. London's biggest fight of all time. We can never go without the two probably greatest British heavyweight boxers of all time ever fighting each other. It's something that needs to happen at this point. Wembley Stadium, London. Ethan thinks it's going to happen in the fall. I do not think it's going to happen in the fall.
Okay, we'll see who's right come
I think
the
this
fall.
Is probably going to happen circa 2040 when it's on Netflix as an exhibition fight.
No, we're all going to spin back on their careers. We're going to have a nice Netflix event in summer of 2028. I don't think the fall is as realistic as people are saying, especially if you want to have Wembley Stadium, an outdoor stadium that tends to rain a lot in London sometimes.
Fair enough.
I feel like it's going to be a next summer thing based on how these two... Anthony Joshua is still coming out of that terrible accident a couple weeks after this Jake Paul fight.
I can't see him
fighting this fall. Outside of the time when Tyson Fury lost to Usyk, he doesn't fight twice in a year. He fights once a year. He'll take his time and he'll pick his fights. He's not going to fight a second time.
I do feel like you said Netflix 2028. I feel like that's up too much time.
2027. I think next summer. I think it's going to be next summer.
So I think that's manageable.
I don't think we're going to go 2028. I think summer 2027 is more reasonable than autumn 2026.
What's also reasonable is to say it never happens.
We've been trying to get this to happen for 10 years right now. Eddie Hearn, wake up.
Knock on wood, man.
And we're going to move on from the boxing. Eddie Hearn's going to be mad because we're going to move on from boxing to UFC. And we're going to have to talk about...
That's hopefully a future fight we can speak about in the near future.
I don't know if you guys saw what Eddie Hearn said today.
No, I didn't.
Eddie Hearn responded back. So Dana White said over the weekend that me and Eddie Hearn would be the first fight on. We deserve to be the first.
I think I saw this.
Eddie Hearn went on and said, "What do you mean it'd be the first fight, Dana? We'd be the main event."
I agree with it,
but I also agree with Dana. It's going to be a horrible watch that nobody's going to want to see. Dana White is 56 years old. Eddie Hearn is like 46.
I feel like Eddie Hearn is a little bit too serious about this, to be honest.
I think Eddie Hearn is a little too serious about it than Dana is. The only time Dana's ever been serious about fighting somebody was Tito Ortiz.
But he might fight him to this day.
Yeah, maybe, but we're going to move on. That was old school UFC. That was 2009. We have to look into like 2026 right here. We have a new light heavyweight champion. For now.
As of 3:50, April 15th,
2026.
I think within a month or two, we will have another vacant light heavyweight championship for the however many of time in so many years. But Carlos Ulbrich has defeated Jiří Prochazka to become the UFC light heavyweight champion of the world. Tore his Achilles out, or tore his knee, Achilles, ACL.
I've seen some Twitter doctors talking about a torn Achilles. They could see certain bones around his knee.
Pretty much that leg did not look good.
He was standing up on one leg.
He was wobbly. He was hurt. It was bad. And Jiří Prochazka decides to kick the wrong leg 10 times in a row and then proceeds to go in with his hands down. Hands down by the body like he normally does, and he gets caught. He just gets caught with the left by Ulbrich. He gets caught. He gets dropped. He gets finished. Ulbrich, your new light heavyweight champion, and we need to now have a conversation about, well, Ulbrich is definitely not going to be holding on to the championship for this foreseeable future. He probably won't.
I mean, this thing could be vacated any minute now.
I'm going to give it a couple months. I feel like they're not going to vacate it until they could get a fight together.
Yeah,
and we'll talk about that one in a little bit. But what I'm thinking we do is Prochazka needs to see a sports psychologist or something at this point. And I want to have this debate about the Bushido code and all this stuff. But this dude, something is happening in title fights.
Do you think it's really that deep, or do you think he just has a horrific fighter IQ?
I don't know what it is. So his last fight against Khalil Roundtree. He looked absolutely garbage for the first two rounds, and you think, how is he going to survive this fight? And he comes back and he pulls out a knockout win. He comes and he does the same thing. He did the same thing to Hill. He did the same thing against Rockage. It's kind of just a classic Jiří. This first title fight in 2022 was against Glover Teixeira. And I said this before, it's one of my favorite fights of all time. If you have never watched Jiří Prochazka versus Glover Teixeira as a fight fan, what is wrong with you? 42-year-old Glover Teixeira is defending in Singapore against the up-and-coming Jiří Prochazka. He's coming off his big spinning elbow victory against Dominic Reyes the year previous.
I'm sure you know this, or listeners probably don't know this. You know this. Me and Travis are from Connecticut, Glover Teixeira. Big Connecticut ties. So I actually know somebody who like works with Glover Teixeira as like a doctor and like a consultant.
I've driven past that gym so many times.
Got some Glover Teixeira connections in this room.
I've met him.
He has no idea. Oh, he knows you.
I have met Glover Teixeira and I have met Alex Pereira.
That's great.
Yeah, no.
Benefits of having connections.
Danbury, Connecticut.
I know we're getting a little off topic, but it was after Alex Pereira won the belt from Israel Adesanya.
A great time.
The first time, when he won the middleweight title for the first time, they had a public key to the city service firm in Danbury. One of the coolest things I got to go to when I was in, like, it was awesome. I'm in a hallway and my buddy's calling me. He's like, oh, have you met Alex yet? And I'm like, oh, no, of course not. I look up and in the hallway, it's just me and Glover Teixeira.
That's cool.
And this is 6 months after the Jiří Prochazka fight, by the way, too. So keep that in mind. Yeah. And then it was 2 days before they announced the Hill fight.
Ooh.
Remember Magomed and Gian Drod, and they announced the Hill fight.
Yeah, I'm
right. The next night after, because there was the vacate lightweight title, because Jiří Prochazka entered. Actually, you know what? Let's go back to the beginning with this. We're getting a little too lost because we're going to go down a little bit of a rabbit hole in UFC light heavyweight history.
The intended rabbit hole.
Because this is wild, by the way, if you think about it. John Jones vacates the light heavyweight championship. Jan Blachowicz wins it.
So now we're deep.
We're going a little bit. Glover Teixeira wins it, and he's the protege. He is the mentor to Alex Pereira. Glover Teixeira. Jiří Prochazka, UFC, June 2022, Singapore. One of the greatest fights of all time. Glover Teixeira has it in the bag. He's up 3-2, it looks like. Jiří Prochazka gets a last-minute submission on one of the greatest jiu-jitsu practitioners the UFC has ever seen. Literally with 50 seconds left, Glover Teixeira taps out, loses the title. Jiří Prochazka wins. It's one of the greatest fights, moments, submissions of all time. Unbelievable highs of highs.
It's like the UFC equivalent to a buzzer beater.
It was the UFC equivalent to a buzzer beater. And then Leon Edwards did it a couple months later, too. Jiří Procházka tears his shoulder. Tears his shoulder completely out of the circuit. They need to go make a new fight for the title. They make Magomed Ankalaev versus Jan Blachowicz. UFC 282, December 2022. What happens is they draw.
Yeah.
And it's not the best fight in the world.
No, it's not.
And Dana White's
had some weird fights recently, but
Dana
we'll
White is mad. So he creates, he says, okay, Glover Teixeira, Jamal Hill next month, UFC 283, January 2023, we will have a new light heavyweight champion. Jamal Hill beats Glover Teixeira. Glover Teixeira retires. Jamal Hill is the champion. Jamal Hill tears his Achilles in training camp. Belt is vacated. Right in time for Jiří Procházka to come back to fight him. Alex Pereira fights Jiří Procházka. Alex Pereira wins. Alex Pereira fights Jamal Hill. Alex Pereira wins. Alex Pereira fights Jiří Procházka. Alex Pereira wins. Khalil Roundtree. The Magomed Ankalaev things. Alex wins it back, and then he vacates it. Ulberg was the last guy that Alex didn't beat. And isn't it funny that Ulberg is now thrown into the curse of you're going to win the light heavyweight championship and then you're going to get injured after.
Yeah,
just like Procházka and just like Hill.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. It feels like this belt is cursed in a way.
John Jones must have put some curse on it. And Alex Pereira that said only Alex Pereira can kind of match my legacy with this belt. Because nobody has been able to get anything going in light heavyweight outside of Alex Pereira.
I feel like we do have to give some respect, though, to Carlos Ulberg. Just anticipating his career moving forward. Obviously, he was like a kind of had like a weird start to his career, but now he's like the guy. But
yeah,
I mean, you got to give him immense credit for knocking out someone. What people seem to not talk about enough, in my opinion, is can you imagine if he had two legs?
Yeah.
I mean, if he had two legs, there's no, he could have got him out of there quicker. He would have got him out of there regardless, it seems. Seems like he's just, maybe Yuri's just behind I don't like to say knockouts are flukes like that, so I don't think it's a fluke. I feel like if you're going to catch him with that left, you're going to catch him with that left.
Honestly, I would love to see this fight one more time happen.
And yeah, I would too.
Because Jiri, what happens with Jiri is he lives by his Bushido code. He's a very weird guy. And Ulberg has come out and said this. He thinks he was scared and it was not mercy. I think it was a mix of both. I do think it was a mix of both.
Educate me on the Bushido code.
So, something that it says in the Bushido code is, heroic courage. Wait, there's a lot of things. I can't really see it right now, but there is a lot about mercy, and it says today be by your example of benevolence and mercy. You inspired me to. Oh wait, this is, I can't find it right now, but
benevolence and mercy essentially is what we're saying.
Jiří Procházka needs to separate the martial art aspect, the samurai aspect, the Bushido code aspect, to cage fighting for money and legacy and titles.
Well, it depends what he himself values more.
Well, I guarantee...
From our point of view, yeah.
Well,
trying to see you win a title from his point of view.
Well, look
he
what
might
he,
be the warrior.
Look what he said after.
Yeah, he regretted
that. He regretted that. I cannot show mercy in the octagon again. You cannot, like, you need to take advantage of these opportunities that you have. And it seems, this guy just seems to freeze up in title fights now. Because Glover Teixeira fight should not have been that close, and he did win. But he was a huge favorite going into that. Glover was the oldest first-time champion in UFC history. He was a journeyman a very successful journeyman by that point. But nobody expected him to win the championship at 42, and everybody thought, oh, he's just keeping this belt. He's keeping this hot so Jiří Procházka could come in and
reign. Because Procházka was looking on demon time.
He came in right on Fight Island, knocked out Volkan Ozdemir, came in, rocked out Reyes
with that spinner.
And he was the truth. He was the truth, and then he wins the title on his third fight.
I feel like almost the more he keeps losing, the more he loses, and he kind of leans into this spiritual side of himself. And I almost don't like it because it feels like I'm starting to agree with you about the sports psychologist aspect of it. Not to psychoanalyze Jiří Procházka, but it feels like it's a coping mechanism in a way where he's like diving into this weird part of himself to justify him just not performing at the highest level. It feels like he's nervous.
Look at the fights he's losing. Look at the fights he's winning, and look at the fights he's losing as well.
I mean, even when he talks about Jiří Procházka, he talks about being scared of black magic and like that Jiri's using black magic.
Alex Pereira's using black.
It's like, it feels like you're coping with your own fear a little bit in these weird fantastical methods.
I kind of agree. He's a guy that lives by code, and you got to respect that.
I respect that. But it just feels like he's scared, and he's trying to get away from it.
Ryan, I was going to ask you something to bring it back to Prochazka, because you originally said that if Ulberg was healthy or didn't have that messed up leg, he would have put Prochazka out quicker. He put him out like
I don't know if it could have been much quicker.
About like 3:45. How much quicker do you think he would have put him out?
Yeah, I guess that
by?
Not really quicker, but I guess he just would have put him out anyway. I guess it's just okay. he was putting him out that night.
I actually don't know about that. And I will tell you one thing, because if Jiří Procházka kind of knew he was hurt, why, like, and granted,
you think he went in like he was,
yeah,
like,
why are you go, yeah, I don't think I, okay, actually, you know what, I'm gonna take back what I just said about you know what, no I'm genuinely gonna, honestly, you know what, never mind, because Carlos, I'll tell you why Carlos Ulberg is winning that night. I was gonna say, if Carlos Ulberg wasn't injured, do you think Jiří Procházka is stepping into his guard completely, hands down, face exposed?
And the answer is yes,
he is, he's doing that no matter what.
Yeah, the answer, so he was gonna get, yes. He, I mean, maybe Ulberg's just different, like he just has a nice left hand hook on
him. I think he was gonna get caught. I mean, it can be that Ulberg is different. Like, look what he did to Reyes. He did the same thing to Reyes too.
He's on,
but
good,
like,
timing right now.
I guess it's just saying, like, oh, maybe Khalil Rountree's and Rakic's power isn't as bad. But
yeah, I mean, I don't know how he. I was surprised to see that. Is there a little chin like deterioration? I mean, you take a couple wars.
I don't know, but I also think just going in like full on, like hands down, and he did it to Alex Pereira. A lot. Like, come on, dude. Alex Pereira drops you at the end of a round, and you don't know where you are, and you come out of this. You come out in round number two, all hands down again, just so
he's getting chinned.
Just so he could hit you with a head kick, like right out of the gate. Come, like, damage is being taken.
He needs to lock in a little bit. I think, as fun as it is, it seems like maybe you're right, because when you really think about it, the type of guys he's getting knocked out by. Alex Pereira, I mean, I guess we can't really place Carlos Ulberg on that level at all, but like...
I'm at a point where I can start to.
If he's that good, then it feels like maybe when it gets to these higher level fighters with a bomb of a left hook, it's just not... You just can't fight the way you.
It's a little too powerful. You're not going in against... Khalil Rountree was a little too fast for him. Yeah. Not powerful enough for him. That's why he was able to... I guess what? And you know what's the worst part about it? Every fight, Jiří Procházka, by round three, he puts his hands up. And then he acts like... Literally, he acts like it happened. He had two fights in 2025. It happened twice.
Yeah, that he's just...
Twice.
Just walking into the flame.
Where he walks into the flame, and he puts his hands up in round three, and he got a knockout victory. And he goes, I didn't know I could put my hands up. It happened twice last year.
So what do you think he's really doing when he, like, in this fight, was kind of, like, putting his hands to his face and pointing to the ground? Like, is he telling him to, like... throw hands, or is he like giving him one shot to win because he feels mercy?
He's kind of telling him to throw hands a little bit because it's very confusing with this guy. You can't get a read on him.
You cannot.
You really can't. And thank God that, or for at least for Prochazka's sake, that Ulberg got one. Thank God for light heavyweight that Ulberg won, because you're looking at a lot of guys that you're looking, now that you have a contenders pool, that you're gonna have a vacant champion again. You're looking at a contenders pools that all look like Alex Pereira's kids. Alex Pereira has all beaten.
Yeah,
and maybe
yeah,
Magomed Ankalaev is the guy.
The contender pool is a kiddie pool.
No, it is a great contender pool right now. I could say that wholeheartedly.
Yeah, but you could say that about every division, really. You could justify it.
No, because at one point this division, you couldn't justify this division at all. In my opinion. But you have Magomed Ankalaev. So, hypothetically, the belt is going to get vacated within the next month.
Alex Pereira, Jiří Procházka.
Alex Pereira's not in the division anymore.
He's still ranked on the UFC
website,
by the way.
He's still ranked, but like that's
I don't know why that was the first one. I'm reading off names, and they still have Alex Pereira.
So, we have Magomed Ankalaev.
They set me up for failure.
Jiří Procházka could still get his wins back. Jan Blachowicz is fighting Bogdan Guskov. And by the way, last year, I got to give this up to Jan Blachowicz, man. Dude was 42 years old.
Yeah.
Coming off of a 2-year layoff.
And he's still locked.
And he arguably beat Carlos Ulberg.
He's 43.
He arguably beat Carlos Ulberg last year. That was a very close fight. And Jan Blachowicz hasn't won a... it's crazy to think. Jan Blachowicz legitimately I will say Jan Blachowicz has not won a real victory within the last 5 years.
Yeah, probably not.
Because Rakic, he tore his ACL, and I think he would have won that fight anyway without Rakic tearing his ACL. But he doesn't have a legitimate win since Israel Adesanya.
Yeah,
and that fight was 5 years ago.
Yeah, it was a good little win at the time.
And it's nothing,
5 years ago now at this point. But if you look at every other division and think about 5 years in the past, it's just a different world.
Different world.
The fact that he's still like sneaking around a little bit
is
pretty enjoyable.
He hasn't really won, but he's been so competitive with guys like Olberg and Pereira and Ankalaev and Bogdan. Like,
he's a draw. Kind of a draw merchant.
They are.
If you were to be on Twitter and complaining about him, you'd call
him and Guskov are rematching, by the way.
I did not know that.
Yes, they're rematching at UFC 328. So that's going to have some title implications.
Yeah, I mean, if he wins, you might just toss him in.
I think Magomed Ankalaev is probably going to be the guy that's going to be up for the first title shot if it's vacated. Jiří Prochazka might have to wait a little bit. And I'm just going to go out into the deep end here. We got to talk about the co-main event. Asmat Mirzakhanov was undefeated. I've seen him fight plenty of times. That guy knocks people out. He gets them on the ground. It's a fun time when he fights. And it's usually quick. Paulo Costa is back.
Yeah, he is back.
That was the coolest thing. Oh, I was so scared at first.
And he was so handsome. He's too handsome to be a fighter.
He is too handsome to be a fighter. But the secret, I don't know what it, dude, the secret juice works at 205. He's back. I'm sorry. This is why I wanted to go crazy right now. Paulo Costa in 2019. After the Yoel Romero has not been the same guy since 2019. He's been a pullout merchant. He's pulled out of more fights than I think anybody can name.
He's a missed weight guy as well.
He had the incident the first time he had to go up from 205, him and Vittori. So in 2019 he has the fight of the year against Yoel Romero. He is an undefeated. He's undefeated going into his fight against Israel Adesanya. And it's one of those rare matchups. We have an undefeated champion, and we have the undefeated challenger. UFC 253, all the stars were aligning. We all know what happens. I don't think we can really say on... Israel Adesanya knocks him out, and then I don't think we can say on air what he does to him after, but like we all know what
he...
We've all seen the clip.
Google Israel Adesanya.
And Paulo Costa... This is when Paulo Costa decides to turn into the pullout... This is when the game starts to get played a little bit here. He gets scheduled for a fight on April 17th, 2021 against Robert Whittaker. He has to pull out of that. Typical UFC fight night. Pulls out of that fight. He comes in, and then he has to go fight Marvin Vettori. And then if you remember what happens with the Marvin Vettori fight, it's supposed to be at 185, and Costa comes out early in the week and goes, I'm not making weight.
I do remember.
He comes out and he goes,
not making
I'm not making weight. Marvin, you're going to have to fight at 205. I don't care. And they did that,
and
Marvin Vettori won, which was very – that was a huge win for Marvin Vettori at the time. And that was coming off of his title fight as well. So – he goes into 2022. He has a fight scheduled against Luke Rockhold that gets canceled, and then he gets rescheduled to UFC 278, where he wins that fight via decision, retires Luke Rockhold, but in 2022, it was like, Paulo, that fight should not have been that close. You should have killed him.
Yeah, and it was kind of a weird fight, too, where they were like both dead on the floor, just like throwing.
And you know how Paulo Costa's 2023 goes?
I don't know. I don't have the photographic UFC memory.
I'm looking at it right now. It's all cancellations.
So, ouch.
UFC 284 against Robert Whittaker canceled. He was supposed to fight Ikram Alaskarov at Salt Lake City after he had his Ikram Alaskarov had debuted. He had a big knockout. They were like, "Oh, Paulo Costa, you want to duck everybody? Here's Ikram." That fight doesn't happen. And then he's scheduled at UFC 294 to fight Khamzat Chimaev. And that was a big one on Twitter all the entire time. And then I remember
betting
odds coming out about Paulo Costa being in that fight. And UFC 294, that's one of the most interesting stories of all time, in my opinion, what happens with that card. Because 10 days out, it's Islam versus Charles. And it's Islam versus Charles 2.
Oh, is this one?
And it's Paulo Costa versus Khamzat Chimaev. And Paulo Costa and Charles Oliveira both pull out on the same day.
Yeah, and you get...
Khamzat versus Usman, and you get...
Usman, though, he put up a nice
Usman
little...
put up a fight.
Nice little fight in that one.
No, I don't think Paulo Costa does. But he comes back in 2024. He loses two fights. against Robert Whittaker and Sean Strickland. That kind of shows that he doesn't belong at the top of the middleweight division anymore.
I just feel like he was dying at a certain point to cut that
and
weight.
And then he comes back against Roman Kopylov. He gets that fight, but he doesn't look so good. And I think that's what it was. That is a big guy. He is dying to cut that weight. And when I found out that Paulo Costa was moving up to light heavyweight, I said, yes, he's needed that for years. He's cutting too much weight.
When he was at 205 fighting Marvin Vettori, you have to think that's not like his healthy 205. No. That's like I'm trying to cut weight here, and
that's
I just
like
can't
I'm
hit
trying
it.
To. That's like called. I needed to cut an extra 30 more pounds, and I couldn't do it.
Couldn't do it. But now he's at like an ethical light heavyweight.
And then guess what? He's only 30. He's 34 years old for light heavyweight. As we could tell, that's still young.
That's as spry as you could get in that division.
Like,
right now.
He's been in the UFC for years. He has star value. One of my favorite fighters growing up. The guy was in Sporcino, was just going crazy. Undefeated. He was knocking everybody out in one round, and the moment he wasn't, it was a war against Yoel Romero, which he has not looked the same since, by the way, until last night. Yeah. Until Saturday night.
And he's got the looks.
And he was scaring me, dude. He was really scaring me.
Yeah, I mean, he was scaring me for sure. But he did look good.
He did look so
good. It didn't ever look like he was out of his.
I thought in round two, maybe, when he had when he was getting taken down and all that stuff, and that happened, and like that was a little.
And it really wasn't an easy fight.
It wasn't
not
an easy
guy,
and that's an undefeated guy too.
Yeah,
like Osman, that's undefeated. He's knocking everybody out in round one.
Seems like
it reminds me a little bit of the old Paulo Costa.
Yeah, I mean,
like
of course,
that's what that's giving me flashbacks to. It's just a fatter version of Paulo Costa.
Yeah, that's it.
But Paulo Costa, foot to the head on Osman, and. I'm not going to lie. If that belt's vacant, give him the title shot.
Immediately? I'm not going to get down with that. I mean, he hasn't even really won fights in his own division. Like,
Okay.
It's purely off name. Okay. I would say it's purely off name.
Are we giving a vacant title shot to then in the light heavyweight division if it's not Paulo Costa?
You mean like right now if you were to vacate it like in the next 20 minutes, you'd probably give it to Ankalaev.
I think you give it to Ankalaev, and then I think you give it to Paulo Costa.
I'm looking at these Khalil Roundtree is probably not cutting it. I mean, do you want to give it? You can't give it to Yanni scheduled.
You can't give
Paulo. Yeah, I mean,
you could maybe depend
listen,
on
even
giving
if
it to
even
Yanni.
If you gave it to him, that's a fraudulent little title shot.
Well, it's right circumstances, right time.
Yeah, I guess so.
Let's not act like he didn't knock out an undefeated fighter, a 16-0 undefeated fighter.
Where was he in the rankings before he knocked him out?
Number six.
So you knock out six and you get a title shot. I mean, that's pretty absurd, but I guess we've seen some right place, right times before.
Patty Pimblett. number seven.
Yeah,
on
Sean
Michael's.
Strickland was in there as a number six ranked.
Sean Strickland.
Adesanya.
Sean Strickland got it off of an unranked win. Like,
I guess so. And honestly, that would be fun because if you were to win the fight, then you get the whole. Like, Paulo Costa gets the whole thing. Like, everyone gets to fight Paulo Costa, and that's like,
we've never
seen any of that before.
That would be so funny.
You get Jiří, potentially Jiří versus Paulo Costa in the future.
I mean, guess what? Even if he loses, you can still get those fights.
Yeah, I like that he's up here in general.
Yeah, no, Paulo Costa's going to make it fun, so I think.
And the fact that he just won means he's going to get, even his next fight,
They have Jamal Hill ranked over him right now.
He could fight Jiří.
So what's it called? Osmat was six. He's now eight. Paulo Costa is seven, and they put Jamal Hill at six. Are we giving Jamal Hill or Khalil Roundtree title shots?
No.
Are we going to give Jan Blachowicz? Maybe if he beats Boskov this time because they had the draw he has to avenge.
If he wins, yes.
But then also think about what Dana does. Dana says, the last time I put you two in a vacant light heavyweight title fight, you guys stunk up the joint and you drawed. Why would I do that again?
Some pretty choice words.
I mean, you might want to give Paulo. It depends what they don't have to vacate it and instantly like let people fight for this title. You could give Paulo another fight against like a Jan Blachowicz if he wins, or Jiří Prochazka in general. His next fight could be Jiří Prochazka. It's a natural next step. I know we want a sports psychologist for our friend Jiří, but he's probably going to
give him the title shot.
Yeah, I mean, I see it. It'd be very exciting for me.
I can't wait to see Paulo Costa. We've
seen Chito Vera.
Dude, I thought Paulo Costa title shots opportunities died in 2020.
Yeah, I mean, you take any chance you can to sneak
him in.
I thought
Paulo Costa title shots, like any hope I ever had of seeing that again, died in 2020.
I'll get on that train.
So
I've been converted.
We have been discussing the state of lightweight for light heavyweight for this for a very
before
long
y'all yeah, move I mean, on. Y'all were talking about the title being vacated. I'm looking at something from TPS Total Pro Sports
now. Oh god.
And apparently,
don't listen to those guys. Those guys are terrible.
I'm just saying. Apparently, like according to them, Ulberg lost his belt due to like heavy partying after he won it.
What?
Oh yeah, he actually lost it. Like
oh, he lost
yeah,
the belt.
Yeah, physical, he lost the physical. It, yeah, belt. Like the
yeah,
physical.
They'll give him.
Yeah.
Yeah, no. But he will. That is very funny, actually.
Yeah, it is funny.
I thought you were about to bring up Total Pro Sports for some like
no.
real. Okay.
No.
I was about to. I was getting a little questionable there. Oh, if we want to talk about light heavyweight disasters, Dominic Reyes, Johnny Walker, congratulations, guys. We were hoping one of you would get knocked out in a goofy way. It didn't happen.
Burger of the night. I guess they were probably both scared to be.
It's okay.
Guys,
it happens sometimes. You're two legendary fighters. We're just going to move past it. I was really excited for this one, and I was very disappointed.
That was my most anticipated one, if I'm being honest.
Yeah, no. What should have been our most anticipated fight of the night was, man, I cannot stand the guy. But Josh Hogan,
I can't
dude.
Stand this dude.
I cannot. He is the.
Yeah.
It is if Colby Covington and Henry Cejudo had a even worse love child. Like
bad. It's corny. It's weird.
It's worse than the two of them put the guy. It's literally the love child of Henry Cejudo and Colby Covington. Every time I see him, that's what I think. I think this is the heavyweight. This is the heavyweight son of these two, because. It reminds me of everything Colby did with all the magas and all the
American
and all that stuff. And it reminds me of everything Henry Cejudo did with the greatest combat athlete. And like I was a wrestler, like he obviously Hogan's an NFL guy. All the remember when Henry Cejudo came out with the body pillows of everybody he beat and he kicked them on stage and he had the one of Dominic Cruz.
Just such a corny little.
That's what this is. Like this is that turned up to 100. The Incredible Hulk. The Incredible Hulk. All the stuff, the Darth Vader jokes he's posting on his story, like all this
he's
stuff.
He's so corny, bro. He's diabolically corny. Do you think he knows? Like he's just cool. He's just playing the fool
game.
Yes,
he's
gotta put the respect
off.
On it.
He's listen. If he had not gone out and had a performance like that, I would have said never do that again.
That's
but
exactly what
that
he
that was the most. That is what heavyweight has been dead for a long, long time. Ever since Francis Ngannou decided to pack his bags and get out of there,
we've all felt like
the heavyweight division is dead.
That's totally true.
Curtis Blaydes has been a shining spot in the heavyweight division to where I can always count on him to put on a good fight, and especially even knock out guys like especially knocking out Jalton Almeida.
Yeah, I mean, that was like heavyweight. The heavyweight gods
Curtis,
shining
Curtis
down
Blaydes
on us just one time.
He's the eternal gatekeeper at heavyweight right now, but that fight was awesome.
Yeah, I mean, I love
both guys
gatekeeper.
Deserve to be in there, like... Josh Hogan showed why he deserves to be on the main stage, why it's only his third UFC fight and they put him in a main card fight like that. And also, shout out to him, because he just beat number 4 ranked Curtis Blaydes.
Yeah, so he's in line for
but he's,
all the
he
things.
Is taking a fight at the White House
yeah,
against Derek
so?
Lewis.
Yeah, didn't Trump make the boss call
Trump,
for that?
Yeah, Trump personally called and said, please let's add Derek Lewis and Josh Hogan. And
Dana White made it official.
It is official.
Yeah.
It is official.
Oh, I didn't know the official.
It's gonna suck. Honestly, that press conference.
Derek Lewis is gonna be like, bro, are you kidding me?
Derek Lewis is not going to be. Derek Lewis is just going to. I don't know how Derek Lewis is gonna react to a Josh Hogan press conference.
Unfortunately,
but
that's a great call. No need to get political, but unfortunately, rare dub. For my great president.
Oh no! I will admit
a dub,
I,
a great
I
call
cannot
from
wait,
from Don.
I cannot wait to see just how the trash talk goes. And Josh Hogan, he's got a better gas tank than everyone at heavyweight.
He does,
and that's granted. That's the former NFL fullback in him.
Of
talking.
Course, that's conditioning.
But
that's
the rest of these heavyweight guys, they don't have conditioning anymore. Curtis Blaydes is the rare exception. Like. When it comes to that. And I don't know if you've ever seen that Josh Hogan versus Bo Nickel wrestling match that came out from a couple years back.
No, I've never seen that.
Well, look that up. It's the round of 16 tournament.
Is it close?
Not really.
who's
Bo?
Yeah, I mean that's what I would have assumed.
But it's better than you think. It was when he was in college. It's really interesting. You could go watch that one out to check out how high level his wrestling really is. And the moment he stuffed the first takedown and flipped off Blaydes, I was like,
they better be standing.
I was like, this is going to be a war. And Outside of Stipe Miocic's Mark Hunt, which happened, it was like the most combined. It was like the most combined strikes in a like in a heavyweight fight since then.
Yeah, I've watched that one. On the classic YouTube.
There was some. It was one of these just fights that like you just had to call your friend and be like, "Oh my god, did you just see what just? Did you see what Josh Hogan and Curtis Blades just did?" That's like one of those wars like Stephen Bonner, Forrest Griffin, Robbie Lawler, Roy McDonald. You just once you watch a fight like that, you have to call and let everybody know what's happening. Curtis, both their faces were disgusting afterwards. Apparently, Josh Hogan was still talking. And I got to give him credit for this because Blades came out in the interview this week and said this, that they were being stretchered. They were in the hospital. They were being – Hokit was – there was Blades and Hokit. They were being stretchered into the hospital. And Hokit is screaming at him saying, Blades, why couldn't you have just gone down and we could have avoided all of this? None of this needed to happen if you had just stayed down. And why did you have to stay up and be a tough guy? Like,
that's pretty cool.
I love stuff like that.
Yeah, I do like that.
I love stuff like that when you hear stuff like that. Like, when you got two guys, like, they've been talking trash for weeks, like, all week. Some of the corniest things, and they're, like, showing this professional respect afterwards. Like,
of course, you got Hogan is like that.
Apparently, Hogan accepted the White House fight from the ambulance.
Yeah, that's crazy.
That's insane.
Trump and Dana called him from the ambulance and went, like, Derek Lewis, 2 months. We know you're dead right now. You want it? And he goes, yes, I want it all. This dude is going to be a problem at heavyweight.
He's got quick hands. That's NFL stuff.
I think we're looking at our next future, like our future heavyweight champion and our heavyweight king.
That's the call of the century.
He's the only athletic heavyweight we have.
He's a wrestler. Which is big for him.
I think
Pereira is going to bust people who are standing up, but that's where I think he... I don't know. He could probably take it.
I can't wait to watch Alex and Gon, though, but we could get into that on a different time. So the other fights that happened. So Josh Hokits and Curtis Blades is a fight that will not be topped in 2020.
I think it probably will. I think that's some recency bias. At times in that fight, they were labored and they're just like,
That's because they're heavyweights too.
There's some demon fights down like at 155.
I feel like that's my point. Why I feel like nothing is going to top me this fight for me in 2026, because I'm expecting that from two guys at 55. I'm expecting that.
You're grading them on a curve.
I'm grading on a curve right here. I expect two guys at 155 or 17 at lightweight or welterweight. Or featherweight. I expect those types of wars from those guys. I'm not expecting that type of a war from 255-pound Curtis Blades and 235-pound Josh Hogan.
Yeah, I understand.
Like,
that's
not what I'm expecting at all. I'm expecting a little boring slugfest, one or two takedowns. Maybe Blades holds him for a second. I'm not expecting one of the greatest stand-up fights I've ever seen in my life, just back and forth.
Yeah, it was good. But I think I don't really grade them on a curve. I'm more partial to the lower division wars. But... great fight, especially for heavyweights. I mean, God,
yes.
That division needed anything, and apparently it needed Josh Hokit, which is kind of a miserable thing.
To recap the rest of UFC 327, Cub Swanson defeated Nate Landwehr in his retirement fight, round one TKO. Cub Swanson was all gas from that point on. It was one of the coolest retirements I've ever seen. 2016, I'm showing my UNC status right here. I watched this fight live, by the way, UFC 206. Hall of Fame fight, by the way. So Cub Swanson is a Hall of Famer. Doohoo Choi versus Cub Swanson, UFC 206, Toronto, Ontario, Canada. Greatest fights you'll ever see. The Korean Superboy and Cub Swanson. Cub Swanson is one of those guys. He never really made it to title shots. He stuck around long enough. He may have had one or two. He fought all the way in the WEC. He's fought everybody from Frankie Edgar to you want to hear how good Cub Swanson is?
Let's hear it.
Give him
his honor for his retirement.
UFC 152, first round knockout, 2 minutes, 40 seconds, win over Charles Oliveira. First round knockout of Charles Oliveira.
Aged very well, but I mean.
And then goes on to his next fight in February of, what's it called, on UFC on Fuel TV Fight Night and beats Dustin Poirier.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
He has fought everybody from He's fought Giga Chikadze, which was a guy. I remember watching his fight against him, and that was me thinking Giga Chikadze was going to be the guy. He was not the guy.
He was supposed to be that guy.
He was supposed to be the guy, yep.
The Giga Kick was supposed to take over.
The Giga Kick was supposed to take over. It did not. Frankie Edgar, Brian Ortega, Renato Moicano, Duo Choi. He had that classic. He lost him. He's fought Max Holloway, Frankie Edgar, Jeremy Stephens, Dustin Poirier, Charles Oliveira, Chad Mendez, Jose Aldo, Jens Pulver. Guys fought a murderer's row, and Nate the Train was the perfect last fight for him. He got a dub. Bellator MMA is dead in the water, buried 6 feet in the ground. Dana White,
unfortunate.
Dana White has their two top this biggest rival for the last decade. He has their two top stars, and he goes, "I'm gonna put them together on the prelims to show how good my organization is and how bad they are."
Yeah, that's true. But I am a where's Gegard Mousasi at right now?
Oh, yeah, still. God, no way, Gegard Mousasi. Gegard Mousasi has been fighting since Pride FC.
Yeah, and he was the champion and a good one.
So he was
recently.
He was the Bellator. Well, he was the Bellator. He got mad. He left the UFC because of the GSP thing.
Yeah.
Because Bisping was ducking everybody for GSP, and he left because of that. But Aaron Pico defeated Patricio Pitbull, 30-27, 29-28. Easy fight for Aaron Pico. Pitbull is just not that guy anymore. He got to the UFC at 38, 37. Time to kind of leave him in the past. Aaron Pico, coming off his big flash knockout loss, he's still looking very good. I think he could be a problem at featherweight in the next couple years. The only thing that he needs to is worried about is his chin.
Yeah, I mean, I think Pitbull might be washed.
Mateus Gamrot subs Esteban Ribovich in round number two with an arm triangle choke. Tatiana Suarez got her win against Lupi Godinez with a rear naked choke. Vicente Luque and Kelvin Gastelum on the early prelims. Vicente Luque with a round one anaconda choke. He's back to looking like his old self again after all his losses. And we got Kevin Holland versus Randy Brown. Big win for Kevin Holland. He looked he looked amazing in that fight.
He does, but I mean, bro, he's like a guy who looks amazing.
What's next for Kevin Holland? Because
Whoever drops out of a fight.
Well, so did you hear what happened? I don't know how true this rumor is about the Daniel Rodriguez.
I don't know.
So apparently Daniel Rodriguez is fighting Leon Edwards.
That's okay.
Right? But remember Daniel Rodriguez and Kevin Holland's fight last year?
Yeah, I think so.
One of the fights of the night. They fought the Dustin Poirier retirement card.
I was watching, man.
Kevin Holland apparently Daniel Rodriguez got arrested in Mexico a couple weeks ago.
Really?
Wow.
But apparently,
what's going on here?
Kevin Holland bailed him out.
Okay, wait, I did see that.
And Kevin Holland said
on Twitter,
"I'm bailing you out. You got to give me the rematch." That's all.
That's like the craziest thing ever.
So Kevin Holland is so far past title shots on his mind.
he
is bailing out guys he has lost to, so he could get rematches and wicks back against them. Kevin Holland is perfect for the sport. I love him. Ever since he did that, he did six fights in 2020. I was hooked.
Yeah, I'm hooked too. His whole thing, he just fights all the time, and he's not even that good.
Let's just give it credit. He'll win. He'll lose. This dude is on his way to however many fights he's had since 2020 is insane. All started with it, the whole run started with Anthony Hernandez and Joaquin Buckley, which is crazy, because those are two ranked guys now. Like legit guys that I feel like would work him.
If that happened now, you'd be like, bro, what
yeah,
are
no,
here?
Exactly. But 2020 Kevin Holland was just different timing. And UFC 327 did go down as an all time great card. Next week, we have Gilbert Burns and Mike Malott headlining a fight night card live from Winnipeg, Manitoba, Canada. Mike Malott's fighting in Canada. Oh boy, we're gonna have some stupid judges this time around, like always. And I can't wait to see how Gilbert Burns gets robbed in Canada.
Yeah, I mean,
I can't stand the Canadian Commission sometimes. It's absolutely ridiculous.
Some homers.
There are a bunch of homers, and I do not like that whatsoever. Go ask Nick Diaz about that. He'll tell you everything. He'll tell you what the Canadians do. And Duo Choi's on the card too. But we got another couple big ones coming up. Aljamain Sterling, Yusuf Salal, JDM Carlos Prates on May 2nd.
That one is.
Yeah, we have some great, great cards coming up that I am very excited to see when it comes to the UFC. But we have to wrap up on UFC 327. What an all-timer of a show. I have a special announcement to make.
Let's hear it.
Let's hear it.
All right. You guys ready? So, around a year ago, I decided to start a little film. I started going to boxing gyms here, a boxing gym around here in the city and everything and all this stuff. I interviewed a fighter before his amateur fight happened, and it went really well, like all this stuff. Got footage from training, all that stuff, and I was like, I'm going to put something together one day. Some stuff's going to happen. I don't know if anybody saw my stories or anything like that, but last Friday I went to the Ringmasters tournament.
I saw that
at Madison Square Garden.
Yep.
Hulu Theater down in the basement, front row seat. But mind you, I'm going to say this. One of the coolest experiences I've ever had in my life.
Great.
The greatest, coolest things I've ever been to.
Really?
Seeing a year's worth of hard work for a bunch of people, for all these fighters, all these amateur fighters that pay off at the end of the year where they're going to Madison Square Garden.
Like, world's most famous arena.
World's most famous arena. They're going to go fight in the Madison Square Garden to go just punch their ticket to the national tournament for the USA Boxing. My brother, John Mocabera, at Jay Newcomb, if you want to follow him, is now won the Ringmasters tournament, by the way. Shout out John Well. Very proud of you of everything. And so, in my interview with him last year, it was something that wasn't expected yet. He was 0-0.
Yeah.
So I am submitting a movie called The Ringmaster to the Fordham Cav Film Festival next week.
Oh, that's really cool.
It is done. I just have to do some voiceover lines for it and get the music in. It's done. It's shot. It's wrapped. It is fully produced. It is airing next week. Shout out Zoe Martinez and Cam Kelly of Cav, of the Campus Activities. They're 2026-2027 presidents. Shout out them. I don't hear about this if it's not for you guys. And yeah, so everybody be on the lookout for the Cav Festival next week.
That sounds like the coolest thing. Like,
somebody, we have a filmmaker in the studio.
Were you interviewing him throughout the whole the process? Or
so at first it was I went in with it way too overhead of an idea. I have so much footage that will never be used. Never. Yeah. Like, I have. My computer, as I don't know if you could tell, is all people just sitting down and sparring footage of gyms here in the Bronx, from boxing here in the Bronx. It's all my footages.
Wow. I'm seeing it. Yeah,
I'm seeing it.
So there's some other things. I wanted it to be a 5-part miniseries at first, and then I remembered I'm a college student. It's too much.
Yeah.
I have a job on the side. Like, it's too much to do that right now. So you know, sometimes in journalism, they say you just got to wait for the right story to come, and all that stuff. The story kind of really started to fill itself out over the last... I mean, granted, I interviewed him before his first fight. He had his first amateur fight. He ran through the city, went 12-0 over the course of the next year, won the Ringmasters tournament, 154-pound novice. So, very exciting to see. I'm very excited to get that out there. Just so excited. We're going to be posting something about it tonight. Needed to officially announce it on here. It's one of the reasons why we're so amped up today.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, that got me amped up. That's cool.
Very excited. Very excited for that. You'll be seeing a post on that later.
Great.
And hopefully nobody inserts themselves into my business that doesn't belong to, like, a specific somebody that we can get into right now as we talk about Pat McAfee and WrestleMania 42.
Yeah,
Ethan, it's terrible. I'm gonna say this right now. This is legitimately one of the worst builds to a WrestleMania I've ever seen in my life.
Well, I mean, you definitely. I don't necessarily disagree with that sentiment of it being like a terrible build-up, but in essence, like, the first match between Cody Rhodes and Randy Orton with Pat McAfee is
And Jelly Roll,
yeah. I mean, in essence, it's like, what were we thinking?
Not needed.
Yeah, exactly. Like, what exactly were we thinking?
In 2007, Cody Rhodes made his debut on Monday Night Raw against Randy Orton.
Yep.
In 2009, in 2008, Randy Orton recruited Cody Rhodes to Legacy.
Yep.
A group. At WrestleMania 26, they had the Legacy Triple Threat match that Randy Orton won.
Yep.
Cody Rhodes went on to become the biggest star in professional wrestling in that time period afterwards.
Yeah.
And you have the mentor versus the student. One time on the grandest stage of them all, the story writes themselves, and the people, the higher ups at TKO go, Ari Emanuel and the higher ups at TKO go, I need my client Pat McAfee in here for to sell tickets and to make our ESPN deal so much sweeter.
I mean, in some...
it's something that didn't need to happen and is kind of taking me out of the build. We'll see how it goes from here because obviously Pat McAfee's not. It's the second year in a row they did this, and Pat McAfee's not Travis Scott. He's going to finish out the storyline, so I will give it a little bit of a chance. But I feel like it was just not needed, and at this point, it's why is everything a shoot and a work right now?
I mean, I think that's a good question. I personally don't have an answer
to that. You have Pat McAfee coming out on TV saying that the product sucks, that the show has sucked for months, that the show is terrible, tickets are in the garbage. And mind you, you're saying this on your own television show.
Yeah.
You're saying this on your own television. You're acknowledging that you're doing an awful job. And then you have CM Punk, who has nothing to do with this entire thing.
Yeah.
Coming out here and talking about that over and over, and then you have Pat McAfee and CM Punk taking shots at each other when they're not even doing anything together over WrestleMania weekend.
Nope.
Pat McAfee and CM Punk don't need to be taking shots at each other on live TV like this.
Not to mention they're on two different cards.
They're on two different cards, but Pat McAfee has to come in and be like, CM Punk can't sell tickets, that's why I'm here. CM Punk has nothing to do. If Cody Rhodes, one thing, because Cody Rhodes is in your feud.
Exactly.
I understand that. You are just name-dropping people now at this point.
Yeah.
And CM Punk, obviously, he's a petty guy. Well, you know he's going to say some things. Like that's CM Punk's thing.
Yeah.
But, man, Grant, there's some stuff I'm really looking forward to on this year's WrestleMania.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, answer, or at least to respond to what you're saying about CM Punk being petty, in my opinion, he's kind of like the 50 Cent of WWE. In essence, like, if you get on his bad side, he's going to try to embarrass you, he's going to troll you, and basically make your life...
I think Drew McIntyre is more 50 Cent than CM Punk, I'm not going to lie.
Okay, that's
fair. I think Drew McIntyre is even more of a troll.
Okay, that's fair.
I feel like you can't... CM Punk is CM Punk. Like, he is...
He's his own man.
He's going to say what he wants. He's going to do what he wants. He doesn't really care. Like, Drew McIntyre gives me more of a 50 Cent vibe.
Okay.
I'm going to say that one right there.
Okay.
And that's just like that's just because the Twitter game mostly. And if you ever see that. But it is WrestleMania, and it is an event I look forward to it's religion every year that this weekend comes along.
Yeah.
Is it this weekend?
It is this weekend. It is Saturday and Sunday.
I'm so tapped out, but I'm actually kind of a WrestleMania fan.
I will be at the...
That's like the only thing
I will be at
into.
The WrestleMania watch party this weekend.
Where is that, Clinton?
Where's that?
No, somewhere in the city. I don't remember the exact location.
Is it like the official watch
party? It's one of the bigger watch. It's the biggest watch party here in the city. Mm. We're gonna have it's gonna be a huge time. If anybody, I think there's some tickets still available.
You gonna make a little video?
Yes.
Yeah. Do you have a mic? Is that what you did? Or are you using your phone?
I have a mic.
Yeah. Do you buy that yourself?
I either have my own or we use other people. But Ethan, the question I wanted. So yes, there will be a video coming out about the WrestleMania watch party. Ethan, the question I wanted to ask you is, because I know you're more of the wrestling guy than Deptula.
Of course.
What are the five things? What are the five things you're looking forward to this year?
Well, the five
at WrestleMania.
At WrestleMania, I gotcha. The five things I'm looking forward to, I'll just relegate it to matches. I'm looking forward to the Punk versus Roman Reigns for the World Heavyweight Title. I'm looking forward to AJ Lee versus Becky Lynch for the Women's Intercontinental Title. I know you did say, or at least we said, that the first match between Cody Rhodes and Randy Orton kind of wasn't going to be all that. I agree with you, but I still am looking forward to that, namely because I'm a big Randy Orton fan, and I think that, you know, really a lot of matches that Orton participates in are must-see matches, in my opinion, so I'm looking forward to that. And then... I know this one's I'm not doing them in order, of course, but one that I am looking forward to is Obafemi versus Brock Lesnar. Now, the thing about Brock Lesnar is this. Brock Lesnar, he has looked very weak, for lack of a better term, compared to Oba over the last few weeks. But Brock tends to do this a lot. He tends to look weak before much stronger opponents, and then when the day of the pay-per-view or the event comes, he literally just turns back into the beast that some know him to be. He did this against The Undertaker. He did it against Braun Strowman. He did it to a degree against Seth Rollins, and he's doing it against Obafemi now. And I think Obafemi is great, but I think that it'll. I just hope it lives up to the hype. I want to see Oba win, but I don't know what Triple H has up his sleeve. I know that was just four, but those are what I'm mainly looking forward to.
I like that a lot, actually. So I'm going to give my little five. I'm going to give the honorable mention first. Okay. Obviously, shout out the Demon is coming back.
Finn Balor.
Speed. Finn Balor versus Dom.
I show speed.
Oh no. I'm excited to yeet a little bit. I'm not going to lie. I can't wait for the Usos to come out. Oh, I'm a sucker for the Usos. People won't like that take, but
the Usos are dope.
I'm gonna put my arms in the air and do the motion with Jay every time. I don't care. That's my guy right there. The Demon Finn Balor though. It's been 3 years. We need an awakening.
It's been 3 years.
It's been 3 years since he's brought out the Demon.
Wow.
Dominic Mysterio is in for a world of hurt.
Oh yeah.
The Judgment Day storyline. It's finally, or at least Finn Balor. It's finally come to a close.
Yeah.
As the Demon is going to take out Dominic, it's going to be fun. And then hopefully Finn could get a world title from that point on afterwards.
I hope so.
So that's the honorable mention. Number five is the Intercontinental Championship ladder match.
Okay.
Penta, Javon Evans, Dragon Lee, JD McDonagh, Rey Mysterio.
And Rusev.
And my favorite, one of my favorite wrestlers of all time that people, nobody puts respect on his name in 2025 today. The Bulgarian Brute, Rusev. Oh my! I the fact that Rusev is in a WrestleMania match, like, that is enough for me to be like, this match is everything. And granted, it's the fact that it's all high flyers, and then you just have this big, like, it's a bunch of high flyers that are like all small, like they could fly, like JD McDonagh could like do his somersaults off the ladders. Javon Evans, as we all know, he is bouncy, 21 years old.
Yeah.
Dragon Lee, Penta, Rey Mysterio, three of the.
And then you just have this giant brute.
The past, present, and future of Lucha Libre all in one ladder match.
Yeah.
In Rey Mysterio, Penta, and Dragon Lee.
Yeah.
And then you have the 6 foot, 300-pound Bulgarian brute Rusev that is going to be tossing ladders and throwing things at everybody. Is he going to win the match? Absolutely not. Am I excited to see my Bulgarian brute back on WrestleMania? Yes. Who do I think will win this? I think Javon Evans takes home the Intercontinental Championship gold, becomes the youngest Intercontinental Champion of all time.
I mean, that's a pretty good take. I won't necessarily.
Or Penta retains.
To be honest, I think it's. I'm a big Rey Mysterio fan for anybody that may be listening.
We don't like deadbeat fathers.
Me too. I'm a big Rey Mysterio fan.
You support deadbeat dads.
Well, then,
I don't think. you can like someone's talent, but yet disavow their personal life, but that's neither here
nor
there.
Is he a personal?
Dominic Mysterio would disagree with you otherwise, but okay.
That's fair. I think it's probably going to be between Javon Evans, like you had said, or Rey Mysterio, in my opinion. I would like to see one of the two take it, but we'll see Sunday.
So that was obviously.
That was number five.
So, and then number four, we're looking at the Men's Intercontinental Championship. We're going to go right into the Women's. The Women's Intercontinental Champion, AJ Lee, competing on WrestleMania for the first time in 11 years. I can't believe it. It's really a shame, though, that she has to go against the greatest women's wrestler of all time. It's not just me that says it. It's Sports Illustrated. It's ESPN. It's Bleacher Report. Becky Lynch, the man, the greatest women's wrestler of all time. She will become a three-time women's intercontinental champion this Saturday. No debate had whatsoever.
I don't necessarily disagree that she's going to win the title, but I'm going against the grain with all of those reports. I'm not going to say she's the best women's wrestler
ever. She's the man. She's the first woman to ever made a wrestle. She walked out with both belts. That match was there for her. She's the greatest women's wrestler of all time. That was the last one-night WrestleMania. Women main evented it. It took 35 for women to main event until Becky Lynch.
Yeah.
Greatest women's wrestler of all time. You cannot tell me otherwise.
Okay. Then I guess we just have disagreement.
And then also look at it. Who would you say is the greatest women's wrestler of all time?
In my opinion, I would probably say I'm a little biased, but I would probably say Trish Stratus.
Ethan, you're 21. You weren't even around for her prime.
I know, but I'm just saying I've looked at like a whole bunch of things about her and, you know, like I said, it could be because I'm a little biased, but... Like, She's literally my GOAT. I'm not saying Becky Lynch isn't great. She is, but I just don't think I'm ready to give that to her yet.
I think the moment she and her and Trish had that ladder match, I was ready to give it. Or the cage match.
The cage match. That was dope.
I was ready to give it to Becky right then and there. Actually, I was ready to give it to Becky when she turned on Charlotte at SummerSlam. So at number 5 and 4, we have the men's and women's Intercontinental Championship.
Yep.
Number 3. When you have two top stars and you have no storylines for them, and you have two of the greatest in-ring wrestlers of all time, sometimes all you have to do is just put them together in a match. And that is exactly what Seth Rollins versus Gunther is. Two best in-ring workers of the of this generation. Gunther, just peak magic. If you're a fan, put those two in a ring for 20 minutes, nobody's going to complain. It's going to be an awesome match. Going into number 2, I'm most excited for when it comes to WrestleMania this year, it's got to be CM Punk and Roman Reigns.
Yeah.
The storyline has wrote itself over the last 14 years.
Yep.
From Roman coming into the Shield,
yep,
to Punk quitting the company,
yep,
to him going on the Art of Wrestling podcast to, yep, talking about and exposing the plan for Roman Reigns to become the next greatest of all time,
yeah,
to them trying to make Roman Reigns the next greatest of all time and fans rejecting it because of what CM Punk had said in the interviews, and then for chanting for CM Punk for the next decade. This every promo they've had recently, it's been really personal. It's turned into a brawl.
Yeah.
Monday really sent home like the point. It was a therapy session. CM Punk comes out and says to Roman Reigns, he says, "I envy you. I hate you because I envy you.
Yeah.
I hate that I envy you, but I do. I wish I was born into a wrestling royal family. I wish they entrusted me with the 1,314 day. I wish I got
1,316.
16. I'm thinking of combining both of theirs. That's
you're
why.
Good.
I hate that how hard you have to work for, like, and I hate that I have to envy you, but I do. And then Roman said the same thing where he says, "I hate you because the crowd, like, I want what you have. The crowd chanted for you for 10 plus years while you were gone, and I know they won't do that. I want your connect." It was like one of these things. These two guys hate each other because they want what the other one doesn't have. They want what the other one has, but without, it makes them who they
are.
I
get what you mean.
Roman could not have what CM Punk has with the crowd.
Yep.
And Punk cannot have what, you can't have both together.
Yeah.
And they hate each other for it. Yep. And they hate each other for everything they've said to each other over the last 14 years behind the scenes, on the screen.
Yep.
It's just one of those things, man, where I'm just like, I'm very excited to see what happens, and I'm kind of hoping for a united bloodline.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
I think we need a united bloodline for once and for all to take out the CM Punk problem. There was a lot of Samoans roaming around backstage on Monday's Raw that I was thinking. I'm like, why are the MFTs on Raw right now? why are these guys here? Not for CM. I think something's going to happen at Mania where I think the MFTs and the bloodline are going to reunite and we're going to have a united bloodline.
Okay. That's if Roman wins. Although I don't think he will. I still have Punk winning that.
And then the number one, really?
Yeah, I still have Punk winning that. Yeah.
Acknowledge the tribal chief. We're new.
I'm acknowledging it right now.
All right, then I'm
even
the
though
only
I
one.
Want CM Punk to win because that's, I can't believe he's still here, to be honest.
All right,
old man Phil.
Old
as Roman would say. As Roman would say, old man Phil. And finally, the number one thing I'm most looking forward to at WrestleMania. ESPN, I have to give your executives at your network credit because if you can only air 1 hour of WrestleMania on Sunday on your network, on ESPN, live for the entire world to see for free, I am putting the 6'6", 310-pound freak athlete from Lagos, Nigeria, right in the middle of that spot and showcasing Obafemi versus Brock Lesnar. This is a match that I have been waiting for forever, it seems like. Obafemi just got to the roster last month, but I've wanted to see this for 2 years.
Yeah.
First pay-per-view event for Obafemi was the Royal Rumble. Comes in at number one. They have that little showdown. The pop was undeniable for when he came out. There has not been a wrestler in the WWE since Brock Lesnar to take over like Obafemi has. And I'm a little afraid that Brock Lesnar is going to win because that's what he seems to do at times.
Exactly.
But what I am excited for is 6 o'clock, ESPN, live right on ESPN, right on ESPN Play. Not ESPN Plus, not
just
ESPN Direct.
ESPN in general.
Live on ESPN. Right at 6 o'clock, Obafemi versus Joe Jonas singing the national anthem goes right into Obafemi versus Brock Lesnar. I'm hyped. I'm ready. I'm excited. the future is now. And then guess what? It goes right into the ladder match right after that.
Great.
So I'm excited for combat sports is up right now. Hopefully WrestleMania turns out well. The light heavyweight championship picture needs to be resolved. Like, of course, we have a new champion.
Yeah, it got to be resolved. We got to resolve this.
So much is going on. The Ringmaster comes out next week. It'll be on YouTube next week. Premieres at the film festival next week.
Watch the Ringmaster on YouTube.
Watch the Ringmaster, fellas.
Yes, I'm Travis Hayden, joined by Ryan Deptula and Ethan Best. This has been Pound for Pound. Emma Leonardi has been producing for us today. And I am signing off right now because I've been doing too much.